Welcome.
Hare Krishna. Today, the lecture is entitled, Krishna Prefers Serving His Devotees. Krishna prefers serving his devotees. Here in the material world, we have a relationship. You see it everywhere. It's very common. We all know it. It's called master and servant. Right? If you work for somebody, that person's the master, you're the servant. If you run your own home, then perhaps you're the master, maybe. And others are the servants. But master and servant is how it works in the material world on so many levels, in so many experiences. So that's how it is here. Here we have the relative dimension. In the spiritual world, we have the absolute dimension. Can there not be the master and servant in the spiritual world as well? Oh, yes. Oh, yes. But the roles can be reversed. The roles can be reversed in the spiritual world. Because if it's, everything is absolute, what does it matter if you're the master or the servant in the spiritual world? One's as good as the other. Here, there's a big difference. Not in the spiritual world. Sometimes the master becomes the servant. This is true with whom? With our friend Krishna. That's who it's true with. And Krishna loves that. He loves being the servant in certain circumstances. So let's find out how that works with Krishna. One time Krishna was breastfeeding, and Yashoda, his mother, was breastfeeding him. She had some milk on the stove inside, and the milk began to boil over. She unplugged him, put him down, and went in to take care of the boiling milk. Krishna did not like that. I know from being a father, babies don't like that. Because that is the best circumstance in the world when they are breastfeeding. They're in an altered state. I've seen it many times. So Krishna got angry. He went in, he broke the butter churn, stole the butter out of the churn, fed it to the monkeys. By the time Yashoda came back, saw the chaos going on, Krishna, you rascal, she grabbed a stick, she went after him, and off he went, out the door, into the courtyard, running away. And here's Yashoda running after him, chasing him with a stick. Finally, she caught him. She decided, okay, I have to teach you a lesson. I'm going to tie you to this mortar. It's a big mortar, not small mortar. So she found a piece of rope, took the rope, tied it to the mortar, began to tie the other end to Krishna, but it was this much too short. So then she went and found another piece of rope. She tied the two pieces of rope together. Now she had a big, long length rope. And again, tried to tie that, tie it to Krishna. And it was this much too short. How could that be? And this went on and on. Several pieces of rope. Several times. Finally, Krishna felt sorry for her. She was panting and puffing and tired, and so he allowed the last piece of rope to be long enough and tie him to the mortar. So the whole universe, in some cases, is in awe of God is even sometimes afraid of God. But God himself, Krishna, he's afraid of Mother Yashoda with the stick. And he runs away. How can God be afraid of a jiva, of a soul? That's the pastime he plays. This is how Krishna behaves and acts in the spiritual realm. One day, Nanda challenged Yashoda. Nanda is Yashoda's husband. He was thought he'd wind her up a bit. And of course, Krishna, she's still like maybe 3 years old or something like that. He's very young. Nanda says, "Is this Krishna of yours? Can he do anything useful?" Yashoda's reacting. "My Krishna? Yes, he can do something useful. Krishna, go get your father's shoes and bring him his shoes." So Krishna went and found Nanda's shoes, placed both shoes on top of his head, and he brought them to his father and placed them at his feet. And Nanda replied, "Oh, yes, yes. This Krishna of yours is very good." Of course, you know how a mother likes to think of a baby. Her baby is the best in the world. This baby is a bit unusual. It's Krishna. So this is how the childhood pastimes of Krishna were enjoyed by those around him. In this case, his parents. Now, if we look at the Bible, Old Testament, New Testament, if we look at the Quran, if we look at the Hebrew Torah, do we have any pastimes of God behaving in this manner? I don't think so. I don't think so. In any of those books, the rasa, a relationship a human can have, a soul like us, can have with God is generally, on the one hand, awe and reverence. We all understand awe and reverence toward God. That's an acceptable relationship. Or, on the other hand, fear and retribution. God will come and smite you down. You will go to hell for your sins. That's fear and retribution, in case you didn't know that. But I don't hear any pastimes like this of Krishna serving, bringing the shoes. We have the sages who have said in various places that the souls of Nanda and Yashoda, who became Krishna's parents, must have developed unbelievable degrees of punya or sukriti, which is what? Good merit. I could say good karma, but it's not. It is good karma, but it's kind of beyond that. It's divine merit. How could you win God as your son? Is it possible? Yes. It's possible. In this system of yoga, it is not only possible, it is probable, it is likely, and it is encouraged. This is the norm. Not on reverence, yes, is there. Fear and retribution, if you enjoy that, you go ahead, knock yourself out. But we don't need that. That's not important. So, how can this happen? It says in the Bhagavad Gita, we know Krishna to be the supreme controller. Arjuna tells him, Ishvara Parama Krishna, that you are the supreme Godhead. You are the Lord. And then in the Brahma Sanghita, it says, Govindam Adipurusham, which says that Govinda, which is another name for Krishna, is the Adi Purusha, the original person. Who can be the original person? None of us are the original person. We know that. But God ultimately is the original person. God, by definition, takes no birth. He exists. When he comes down into the material world in one of his avatars or incarnations, he may take on what appears to be a normal birth, and he will have parents, as I just described. But ultimately, God is his own person. He also says, Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, Sarva Yoni Shukanteya, Aham Bija Prada Pita. Among all of these beings, I am the seed-giving father. That's what we know about God. Most all of us know that, no matter our backgrounds. So how is it that the ultimate Godhead himself would accept what appears to be an inferior position? Letting his mother tie him up to the mortar, chase him with a stick, carry his father's shoes on his head. Why would he do that? So he carries out these kind of pastimes with not only his parents, with his friends, the coward boys, in his childhood, with the gopis, the coward maidens, and with others we'll talk about. Why does he do it? He does it for one reason, and one reason only. What is that?
He enjoys it.
He enjoys it. Out of?
Love.
Love. He does it out of love. What do you do out of love? You do have done many things out of love. Things you swore you would never do. Things you never expected to do your entire life. When you heard about somebody doing something out of love, you said, well, I would never do that. That's nonsense. And then next thing you know, you're doing it. Yeah? Anybody? Love. What's more powerful? Nothing. In the universe, beyond the universe, that's it, my friends. That's what we do here. Bhakti. Yoga of love and devotion. Why? Pass the time? Not exactly. Because it's the highest expression you can have with anybody and anything in this world and beyond this world in the absolute spiritual plane. It's still the highest expression. That's why. That's why Krishna does this, out of love. The impersonalists, the Mayavadis, people who want to merge and become one with God and give up their own individuality and merge into the oneness with God. I am God, you're God, we're all God, we're in the energy. Is that a legitimate level of God realization? Yes. It is. But it's on this level. But the devotees of God, the Vaishnavas, the followers of Vishnu, that's what we are here. We want to become God's parent. We want to become God's friend. We want to become his servant. We want to be his lover. These are the five relationships, rasas, that one can enter into with the Godhead. We've talked about this many, many times. I'm not going to get into those today in detail. But this is the reciprocal loving relationship, loving exchange. And Krishna loves it. Are there other aspects of the Godhead that enjoy this? Yes, some of these relationships or rasas, like parental, the awe and reverence is always there. That's there. And you can be God's servant. You can even be that right now. Help serve out the Sunday feast. You be the servant. So, I mean, many of these are readily available. Krishna loves it when the gopis would challenge him and criticize him. Oh, you Krishna, you. You invite us to come out under the moon and have the dance and play music right down by the Yamuna in this lovely romantic atmosphere, and then you run away. Where do you go? Can't find you. We search all over the forest for you. We yearn for you. We miss you so much. Why do you love us and leave us? And then he comes back and they scold him. You so-and-so, you did this, you did that. He loves it. He enjoys it. Do we not enjoy some of that? This is Ireland, my friends. No one takes the better than the Irish. No one can tear you into pieces and put you back together faster than the Irish. That's their rasa. That's what they do. They enjoy it. And they're real good at it, too. So, dare say, the more Irish people that become liberated souls and go to Vaikuntha, the happier Krishna's going to be. Because he enjoys that kind of thing so much. Now, that doesn't rule out any of you other people who are non-Irish, okay? Everyone worships Krishna as a supreme, bows down to him in supplication, offering obeisances, and sometimes fearing, as we mentioned. Krishna looks at this behavior and goes, oh, yeah, but why doesn't anybody chastise me? Why doesn't anybody scold me? Why doesn't anybody take me in hand? That's what he likes. Can anyone chastise God? Can anyone criticize him? Can anyone have words with him? Who will he accept it from? Anybody? No. Only his devotee. What does that mean? Only someone who has established a relationship in love. How much will you tolerate from a loved one? Those of you that are parents and your children, well, I'm just going to say your children get older. No, not necessarily. Once the ego appears in your child, that's sort of the turning point, correct? Once the ego appears, now the child will tell you what he or she thinks. And you may not want to hear it. You would not normally tolerate that from certain people or other children, but you may tolerate it from your own child. Why would you do that? Again, out of love. That's why you would do it. God is the same. So, did he learn that from us, you think? Or did we learn that from him? With Arjuna, we know Arjuna from Bhagavad Gita, who had to fight the war. Krishna agreed to be his chariot driver. Krishna was his devoted friend. So he served Arjuna, didn't he? Arjuna was fighting the battle. Arrows flying everywhere, arrows with mantras, with various types of weapons attached to those arrows. That's what they used to be able to do. They could consecrate an arrow with a mantra, and they could bring a fog bank, or they could bring pouring rain, or they could different things they could do. And Krishna was driving the chariot, driving the horses. And he's famous in this role as Partha Sarathi, the chariot driver of Partha. Partha is Arjuna. It's another name for Arjuna. And there's a wonderful Partha Sarathi temple, Shiv, in Chennai. You've been there. Of course you have. I've been there too, more than once. So yet another example. God has many, many names. Why does he need so many names? Because he's God. Is any Spanish people here, from Spanish speaking people from Spain or any Spanish country? Okay, here we go. Please tell us your full name.
Maria.
No, the whole thing.
Maria.
Only three names?
I only have actually one, just Maria and Simon Montelongo are my parents.
Okay, that's pretty short.
Yeah,
as well. Cristina Casado.
Yeah, but it's not more. Yeah, it's not.
Come on, girls.
I know, you just got it.
I have many, many Spanish-speaking friends, and this goes on and on and on and on. 14 generations. Yeah. Garcia at the end. So Krishna has many, many names. And a lot of times his names reflect his pastimes, such as Yashoda Nandana. Nandana means son of Yashoda. But Nandana literally means what? Joy. The joy of Yashoda. Isn't that a beautiful name to call your child? So it's your name plus Nandana. That's your child. Oh, you're my joy, my pride and joy. Yashoda Nandana, Devaki Nandana. Devaki is his actual mother. Radha Raman. Radha is his, the love of his life, his main consort. And Raman means lover, the lover of Radha. Govinda. Very famous name. What does Govinda mean?
Go plus Vinda.
Go plus Vinda, yes. What does it mean?
Go
means cow. Vinda means he gives pleasure to the cows. He looks after the cows. Cow is the mother. Cow is a symbol for the mother. Why is the cow sacred? Well, I could talk for that on the next half an hour, but I won't. Because the cow is a symbol of the mother. So, Govinda, Partha Sarathi, as we mentioned. There are devotees in all species of life. All species. What do you mean, all species? All species. Humans we know about, gods, demigods, or you might say in Christian parlance, we might say angels, archangels. Animals, who's devoted to Krishna? Well, the cows, we know for sure. Birds, Garuda, his ride, his bird carrier. What the parrots in Vrindavan, in his Vrindavan Leela? Krishna could speak parrot. He spoke parrot. He could communicate with them in their language. Insects?
Bees.
Bees. The bees, for sure. The honeybees who were always buzzing around Radha and Krishna. Krishna is said to wear this beautiful long garland of forest flowers, Vanamala, like this one, but only much longer. This one is beautiful. It's already been offered to Krishna. And around that garland, always buzzing bees. Plants. Any devotees in plant bodies? Tulsi. Who else? Ashvata. The banyan tree, no? Devotees everywhere. Why Krishna? Why this manifestation of God? What does Krishna mean? It means all attractive. The most attractive. The most compelling. The most magnetic. The most charismatic. That's what it means. All species are mesmerized and wonderfully attracted to this form of the Godhead. That's why we go on and on about Krishna. There are many, many other forms and manifestations of the Godhead in varying capacities, with varying abilities, and varying purposes. But no one is as attractive as Krishna across the board to everyone. That's why we go on about Krishna. That's why. He is just as attractive to a baby calf as he is to all the rest of us. The Srimad Bhagavatam or Bhagavat Purana was being spoken by Shukadeva Goswami to Maharaj Parikshit. Parikshit was part of the Yadu dynasty, a descendant. He was the grandson of Arjuna. And he had 7 days to live. He had been cursed. He had 7 days to live. I won't get into that part of the story. So if he only had 7 days to live, he asked the sages, what should I do? Actually, in Vedic philosophy, if you know when you're going to die, if somebody tells you, you've got 6 months to live, 2 months to live, 7 days to live, that is considered to be a great blessing. You may argue and say, no, I have terminal cancer. Yes, I'm sorry to hear that, but if you know roughly when you're going to die, it is a great blessing. Because now you can get serious. And you can fully focus your life on your spirituality, your spiritual path, on the welfare of your soul. We watch everybody here. Everybody since we were children, we watch them die. So-and-so died. Oh, come on, get dressed. We're going to a funeral. This person died. Oh, remember your aunt? She died. Huh? How many times do we hear this throughout our lives? And you know what? The most marvelous thing? We think it will never happen to me. You know it will, but you don't believe it. It'll never happen to me. Hello? Your turn. It will happen at some point in time. Alright? So anyway, that's what Maharaj Parikshit was doing. Listening to what? The pastimes of Krishna on earth 5,000 years ago. Tell me all about it. Please prepare my soul for leaving in 7 days. And one of the verses here is this. Maharaj Parikshit heard that out of his causeless mercy, Lord Krishna, who is universally obeyed, rendered all kinds of service to the sons of Pandu. Sons of Pandu were Arjuna and his brothers, the five brothers. And the rightful king among them was Yudhishthira. If you read the Mahabharata, yeah? So he rendered all kinds of service to the sons of Pandu by accepting posts ranging from chariot driver to president in the assembly, and the Rajasuya sacrifice, to messenger, to diplomat, to friend, to night watchman, etc., all according to the desires, the will of the Pandavas. What do you need me to do? I will do that for you, says Krishna. What will he do for you? What do you need him to do? What does he want in exchange? All your money? He doesn't need your money. What does he want? One thing. Love. What won't he do for you if you give him your love? Nothing. There's nothing he won't do if he actually knows, more importantly, feels that you love him. What would you do for me? I'm not Krishna, by the way. What would you do for me if you knew I loved you? What would I do for you? What we do for each other? It changes everything, doesn't it? He obeyed the Pandavas, serving them like a servant and offering respects like one younger in years. But he was God. When he heard this, Maharaj Parikshit became overwhelmed with devotion to the lotus feet of the Lord. When he heard what Krishna had done for his family members, he became overwhelmed. I'd be overwhelmed too. In Vaikuntha, in the spiritual world, there is equality between God and the living entities. There is equality. They enjoy themselves on an equal level. Still, everybody knows, yeah, this is God. But depending on your relationship, when he walks in, you don't necessarily have to hit the deck, hit the floor, and bow. Depending on your relationship. Hey, Krishna, how's it going? What's going on? You're late. Where you been? It's familiar. It doesn't have to be formal. Normally we think of relationship to God as very formal, awe and reverence. Better just behave yourself. Let's go. All right? Now, when you know him intimately, in whatever relationship, it's no longer formal. It's familiar. Familiar means he becomes like what? Family. How do you treat your family? Like this? I don't think so. No. Hey, stop that. Familiar. But here in the material world, when Krishna is in the material world, it's different. Here, Krishna sometimes forgets. He actually forgets. He forgets. He is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. What's he thinking? And the devotee forgets that he's supposed to be the eternal servant of Krishna. This is my friend, Krishna. This, I'm the coward boy, he's a coward boy. We're messing around, we're looking after the calves, we're playing games. He carries me on his shoulders because I won the game. That's his penance. He has to carry me around. Right? How is it? I mean, it almost sounds ridiculous. How would God forget that he's God? Under the influence of Yoga Maya. Yoga Maya means the spiritual internal potency of God. We are in under the influence of Mahamaya, illusion. What is the essence of that illusion? We think that we are these bodies. We have forgotten that we're a soul. The soul is eternal, right? When we forget, we're under the influence of Mahamaya. The vast majority of those people outside that window, my friends, they're all in Maya. And so are many of us. That's why we're here. Because we forgot. Geez, there was something important for me to remember. I can't remember what it is. Oh, I shouldn't be here. I got duped. I got hoodwinked. Here I am. Again. And now I'm from Spain, and this one's from Mauritius, and this one's from India, and this one's from Canada, and this one's from South Africa, and off we go. And even a couple from Ireland. What were we thinking? So Krishna gets absorbed in his pastimes, and he actually forgets sometimes when he's down here, when he's with his devotees and his closest associates. Doesn't forget when the demons show up, mind you. He remembers clearly then. When Krishna decides to take birth in the material world, who does he choose for his mother and father? Who does he choose for his friends? Who does he choose for his associates, his wife, wives, whomever? Who does he choose? All devotees. His devotees. Some of them come down from the spiritual world. Some of them come down from the heavenly realms. They're demigods. Some of them are here. Could come from anywhere. Does he choose non-devotees to hang out with him in close proximity? No, he doesn't. Even the many of the souls who take the role of demons or his enemies here in the material world, this demon stuff, killing off demons and bad guys and all that, that goes on in the material world, not in the spiritual world. But even those souls who play out those kinds of leelas or pastimes, even they are devotees in come down from the spiritual world. Oh, we're going to have a stage play. Okay, let's go. You get your costume on, and you play this role. Oh, you were so good, I was convinced you were the worst demon on the planet. But I know it's not true. Loving Krishna. Well, what are you trying to tell me? That you're trying to impose this love concept on me for God, for some stranger who lives in the sky. I can't see, I've never seen him. Whoa. What are you talking about? Sounds absurd. Let's figure it out. You love your body, right? Why do you love your body? Because you're in it. You try to look after it, you try to look good, you try to be healthy, it's eat right, etc., right? You hope that other people like you. That's human stuff, no? But why do we love our body? Because inside is the soul. The soul is the real identity, the eternal identity. The body is the temporary identity. So if once this body dies, if you still have material desires, you will get another body. No problem. How many can I have? As many as you like. All you have to have, only one qualification. At the time of death, you have one material desire. Oh, geez, I just wish I got it done. Done. Give this guy a body. Just one. That's all it takes. Oh, that girl, I wish I could have met her. I've met her again. Okay, I'm going to die. Okay, give him a body. He wants to meet her. Set it up. You're back. you're back. That's how it works. So why do we love the body? Because the soul's inside, right? What happens when the soul leaves the body, my friends? Are you still attracted to the body? Are you still attracted to the bodies of other people that you absolutely loved? When the soul leaves the body and is lying there, that body? No. It's no longer attractive. It's the same person, looks the same. The life force is gone. It becomes unattractive. We know what's going to happen to the body in the next few days. It's going to happen very quickly. So what do? We either bury it, we burn it, whatever. So what's the attractive feature? It's not the body, is it? It's the soul. It's the soul. That's what's attractive. And why, tell me, is the soul so attractive? Because it's part and parcel of Krishna. It's part of God. It's the same spiritual energy. Only God has this much, you have this much. He has infinite amount, you have an infinitesimal amount, right? That's why we're so attracted. If here, why do you come to this room? If no one was here, if this room was empty, who would come? Because we have God here on the altar. You may say, no, you only got statues there, pictures. Yes, but God can take that form for your convenience to meditate on the Godhead, because you cannot see him directly yet. Pardon me, those of you who can. If God wasn't here and the devotees were not here, who would come to this room? So it's the soul, it's the spirit that makes everything attractive. That's the point. So this learning to love Krishna, is this something that we're imposing on you? No. No. That's our natural state. Our natural state is to love. When you have a child, and the child, right out of the womb, what do you think the child is looking for? Love or hate? Love. What does the child want? To be held, to be breastfed, to be nurtured, to be cuddled, to be rocked, to be walked back and forth and back and forth, right? To know that she's safe, that everything is okay, everything is good in the world. Are children born with hate? Not usually. They're born wired for love. Aren't they? People who turn into hating people and or hated people had that knocked into them. Had the love knocked out of them. No? Children have no sense of, when you see little children 2, 3, 4, 5 years old in a playground, they don't care what color you are, they don't care what ethnicity you are, they don't care where you came from and whether you have an accent, they just want to play. You want to play? We're playing. They don't know anything about discrimination. You have to teach them that. You have to point out these differences. This one's good. These kind, stay away from them. You have to learn to hate. It's not natural. So if love is natural, which it is, then what is the ultimate goal of that love? It's God. It's Krishna. You already love God. You just forgot. You forgot. Supposing you get sick, right? You're used to eating, digesting, walking, talking, all the things that we do. We function, right? Suppose you get sick and you can't do some of these things. When you're normally healthy, do you have to think, okay, I'm going to eat something because, well, I'm hungry. And now, all right, now, let me think about digesting it. Do you think about that? No. If you want to walk down the road, you walk down the road. If you want to talk, you talk. These things come natural. If you lose these functions or they become interrupted, we go to see a physician for a cure. To do what? To impose something on you? No, to restore your normal functioning. Correct? So that when you get back to normal, when you're healthy, you don't think about those things anymore. You just go out, you go on and you do them. Right? That's the same thing with love. Loving God is the most natural function. But we have come under the influence of Maya. Here. Illusion. We forgot about that. We are in a, if you will, diseased state. No offense. We're in a diseased state. What are we doing here? We're trying to restore your health. We're trying to restore your natural functioning and simply remind you, hey, oh yeah, you forgot about loving. Oh no, no, I know you're loving. But you're loving on this level, and this level, and this level. What about this level? That's what you forgot about. Hello? Wake up, wake up. That's what we're trying to do. Wake each other up. Pure love for God, for Krishna, is eternally established in the hearts of the living entities. It is not something to be gained from another source, an outside source. When the heart becomes purified by hearing and chanting, how do you do it? Hearing, like we're doing, chanting, offering your food, offering all of your actions to God, which means they will have no karmic reaction. Clear your karma, stop generating karma, go back to the spiritual world. Lord Brahma, the creator, well, of course, he said many nice things, but he chanted this verse in the Brahma Sanghita. Premanjana charita bhakti vilochanena santasya daiva hridayeshu vilokayanti yam sham sundaram achintya guna swarupam govindam adipurusham tamaham bhajami. I worship Govinda. I think of Govinda. I meditate on Govinda. It's Krishna. The original Lord who is Shamasundara. Blackish. Shama means blackish and Sundara. Beautiful. Krishna himself, who is possessed of inconceivable, wonderful attributes. I mentioned a few of them. Whom the pure devotees see in their heart of hearts with the eye of devotion anointed with the ointment of love. So, that's what I invite you to do, my friends. Learn to love Krishna and see what happens. Test it out. All right. Thank you for your kind attention. Hari Om. Questions? Comments? Ishvara?
time I came to you, the demigods were at war with the demons. And when
during the time of?
King Bali.
Bali Maharaj. Okay.
The demigods were at war with the demons. And Aditya was looking for help from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And he said to her that he cannot interfere or do anything about the demigods because they are favored by the Brahmins.
He can't interfere.
He said he could not interfere because the Brahmins
are already favoring the gods over the demons.
Demons.
Oh, okay. Okay. The Brahmins are those who understand deeper philosophical principles. You have Brahmins or priests who help the gods, and you have Brahmins or priests who help the demons. Maybe you want to soften the word demon a little bit. The demons, in a more general sense, are materialistic people. Many people, whatever they do, whatever they try to achieve in life, it's all for material purposes. To make money, to get property, to get position, to get influence. We know this. We need a certain amount of things anyway. We need to generate economy. We need to have our lives and pay our bills. We know that. Okay? But some people, they're very materialistic, overly materialistic, and to the point where they might even cheat you if they can get away with it. You know, you've met people like this. So, the demons also have advisors who will help them to achieve their ends, as do the gods. So if you want to look at the planetary cabinet, the chief priest for the demons or the materialists is Shukra, Venus, Shukracharya. And the chief priest for the gods, the more enlightened souls, is Brihaspati, Jupiter, or Guru. Okay. So in that instance, he said, I don't want to interfere because the Brahmins are guiding them. So, you know, it depends what the circumstances. Sometimes Krishna will or Vishnu will come in and say, I'll come down. And at other times he'll send somebody. At other times he won't do anything. So it just depends what the circumstance is. I'm not exactly sure why he said. But another thing is he wouldn't want to, you know, in strict Brahminical culture, you don't want to offend the Brahmins. I had a Brahmin priest from South India. He said, I want to come and stay at your house. I said, oh, okay. He says, I want to do some yajnas and help people. I said, but you're a Shaivite, aren't you? Yeah, I'm a Shaivite. But what does that matter? I said, well, it doesn't really matter. I said, I come from a different tradition. Yes, but it is all Vedanta. Okay, and he chanted very beautifully. His mantras were. And I said, oh, okay, you can come, you can stay. So he came for a few days and he did some yajnas. This is a few years ago. And, you know, he saw some people and helped them out. And then one day, I looked in the top of my drawer where I had all my rings and my gems. All gone. Wedding ring, red coral, green emerald, yellow citrine, my astrological stones, all gone. Gold necklace, nice, beautiful gold, gone. He's staying in a room five steps away across the hall. I'm going. I said to my wife, all my gems are gone. Well, no one else is there. What would you think? So I said, Pandit Ji, my gems are all gone. Oh, don't worry. You'll find. You have misplaced. I don't misplace anything. Ever. Especially that. Yes, you will find. $5,000. Gone. Because he was a Brahmin, I did not take him to task. 2-3 days later, I took him to the airport and he left with all my stones. He calls me maybe 2 weeks later and he says, I'm in Los Angeles doing yajnas for these wealthy people. I said, good. By the way, I'm not one of those wealthy people, okay? Let's just get that part straight. So he's doing yajnas for these wealthy people, he's telling me. And this woman gave me one necklace to consecrate and use. And now she claims that she gave me two necklaces. And I gave her necklace back, and now they've called the police on me. So I said, excuse me, they're accusing you of theft? Yes, they are. I said, oh, what should I do? I said, well, I'm not sure, Panditji. This is his habits, apparently. But I didn't want to offend the Brahmin. So as Krishna does not want to always to offend the Brahmins, even Duryodhana Guru doesn't want to offend the Brahmins. I had to replace the wedding ring.
Reading further down pages, Supreme Personality of God created a situation where demons lost favor of the Brahmins. And they created that situation.
Yeah, but that's when he came in. He came in as Vamana Dev. Yeah. And what did he do? He came in as a dwarf Brahmin. Extremely beautiful. I mean, when God comes, goddess. Any of the manifestations, absolutely so beautiful. So here was this dwarf Brahmin. You know what a dwarf is? That's a very small person. He wasn't misshapen. He was beautifully shapen, in beautiful proportion. And Bali Maharaj, who was the demon king, but actually was a great soul, said, because they won. They had taken over the heavenly planets, the demons had. Bali Maharaj says, Panditji, please come in. What do you want? I will give you whatever you want. Please ask for something. I am the king. I can give you anything. And he says, No, I want to give. Well, if maybe you would give me 3 steps of land. 3 steps of land? See, this is a dwarf. I mean, how much land is he going to step on for 3 steps? And he says, No. Ask for something more. Ask for something significant. I want to give. No. 3 steps of land. And there's Shukracharya. He's like, don't listen to him. It's a trick. Don't listen to him. He's going to trick you. I know he'll trick you. And yes, of course, if that's all you want, you may have 3 steps of land. So then what did Vamana do? He's an incarnation of God. He began to expand himself. And expand himself and expand himself until he was, as far as the eye could see, first step, he pierced the covering of the universe with his toe. So he covered all the upper planetary systems. With the second step, he went right down to the bottom of the universe and covered all the lower planetary systems. In two steps, he had covered the universe. He says, "My dear King, I have now covered the entire universe in two steps, but you have offered me three steps. What shall I do with my third step? Oh Lord, I know who you are. You are Vishnu, you are God. Please, Lord, place the third step upon my head." Which is what he did. And Bali became the great devotee that he is. And Vishnu took over the entire universe and gave it back to the gods. That's what happened. So, you know, the story ends well. All right? Okay.
I would like to ask about this Maya period. Like, it's interesting. Was it definitely known when it will happen, or it happens due to people behavior or blah blah? And when
it is due to birth in a body in the material world.
And when did it start?
When you decided to come down here. All of us, not just you by yourself, my dear. All of us together. Everybody in the material world is in Maya, is in illusion, thinking they are this body and forgetting they are a soul. And most of their attention goes to their life in the physical world and whatever their desires are, as dictated by the mind and the senses.
So it means
until you wake up.
Until
you awaken, and until you lift yourself out of this illusion.
Means everyone.
Means everyone. Mm-hmm. Means everyone. Okay, we are a little bit over. All right.
Yes.
Thank you.